You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 28 June. We've got Nampak results due within the hour. They are back to profit. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Mia Krechler from Kruger International. The Growth Point update. A lot of moving parts there. I'm curious what Mia gets to think about it. Leon Kutsia from Jubilee Metals. He's the CEO there. Zambian copper operations and the future of chrome. Thoughts for me on needing more money. It's not the money, it might be you. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Banks has link to the Bank Dabanuri scam. Trading platform owner is benefiting from deep fake ads linked to the historic international binary options scheme. It is a damning story from Rake Finneykirk. Business day, Argent credits higher profit and dividend to going global. Steel Products Group extended objectives by investing in stable, developed international markets, according to the CEO. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 0.1%, NASDAQ up 0.2%. East is mostly green, we've got Sydney up 0.33%, Tokyo 1% higher, Hong Kong 0.1% higher, and Tencent down 0.6%. Commodities, mostly green, gold $2,333. Brent, $86.78. Platinum is the red at $1,012 and palladium, $942. Rand, $18.50. Bitcoin, $61,800. And top 40 opening call, 4 points to the downside. I think we can call that flat.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony now with Mia Krechler from Kruger International. Mia, appreciate the early morning as always. Going through the Growth Point trading update, it always reminds me just how giant of a REIT it actually is. And then, of course, there's Australia as well. V&A, obviously, doing excellent. The rest, I mean, my sense is it is improving. It is still tough out there, but the numbers are moving in the right direction, I suppose, is the best way of putting it.
Morning, Simon. Yes, I mean, that's in a nutshell. There's actually very little of Growth Point that you can put in a nutshell, as you say, because it's such a large entity. And just how they operate and how they manage this this intricate portfolio is very impressive. You say that their numbers have improved. That's right. So they have seen sort of less renewal rental outflows. They try and write it in very, very positive terms. So you need to go through those notes quite extensively to understand it. But basically, the vacancies has improved from about, and this is sort of overall, which is a bit of a misleading concept, mm-hmm. because they've got very diverse portfolio. Of course, you mentioned Australia, the retail side, office, and then of course they're moving into industrial and very interesting sort of student accommodation and things like that as well. But overall, their vacancies have improved from just less than 10% to about 8.5%, and they still struggling like most players in the office space, especially in Joburg and in Gauteng, where those vacancies are quite a bit higher. It has improved, as you said, come down from about just lower than 20% to about 15%. A lot of moving parts on that side. But the retail remains the most profitable area of the business for them, despite the fact that it's about a quarter of their revenue. It is the most profitable side of the revenue, the least assets in terms of value, but the most profitable. And they have seen a massive improvement in footfall, especially in Cape Town and V&A, as you mentioned. That is their star property there. And there's a lot of talk about V&A, what's happening there. They've seen quite a big increase, about, I think, 23% increase in international air passenger travel into Cape Town, which has made quite a difference. All those people end up at the V&A at some point. if they stay there or they shop there or they walk around or eat there, they'll be there at some point. And I mean, the retail vacancies at that area is negligent. I mean, there's basically no vacancies at the V&A. They've improved the V&A in quite a couple of interesting ways, sort of more, made it more Instagrammable, which is always important these days. And they've added that time out market, which is also quite a foodie hub. So, yes, I think it's going to draw local travelers there as well, not just the international side. And also they've gone into a power purchasing agreement with Botswana Energy, which is quite a nice move. They will probably get about 70% of their energy for that precinct, starting from 2026, which is quite a large sort of move away from Eskom. And they're still aiming to be net zero at VNA at 2035. But then all the smaller things, which actually encompass about a quarter of Growthpoint, is still very interesting. That's where they're spending a lot of CapEx. That's student housing, as I said. Mm-hmm. It's also also some of the developments in the industrial space where they're going into logistics quite a bit. And those are also profitable areas of the market. So some of those assets like the student housing that I've mentioned will probably be listed separately in the next couple of years. Still a lot of development going on in that area. And as I say, that's taking up a lot of CapEx. But those tend to be profitable over the long term. Australia has been a bit of a downer. A bit of a sort of a tough area to navigate for them lately, as everywhere in the world with higher interest rates, it's been quite a pressure for these REITs. We know these REITs, mostly people invest into REITs to get a good yield. With Growthpoint, that's no exception. I mean, you get a yield of over 10%, which is still very attractive, even compared to what you get from interest rates. The share price, of course, not going anywhere really. It's just moving sideways. Because you're getting this massive yield. But yeah, so it's an interesting space. I think there's still a lot of sort of tough economic things to navigate in South Africa, not only here, but especially here for companies that have a large portfolio in the office space. And then, as you said, we had a conversation last night, you and I, saying that retail just always surprises in South Africa, and it still seems to be the case here.
Yeah, I mean, retail sales in Vienna up 17%, foot traffic 11%, and as you said, I mean, vacancy 0.14%. I mean, the Vienna is an absolute beast. A quick follow-up question. And you mentioned there, I mean, the growth pointed a 10% yield, trading at about a 40% discount to net asset value. Are these worth putting in a portfolio just for that yield? I mean, the growth point is not going away.
No, you know, I think if you want any exposure to property, this is probably sort of a safe bet. One of the other ones in the top 10 that I also like, and I think they've cleaned up their house quite a bit, is Fortress, of course.
Yeah.
They've really simplified the business structure, not to share classes any longer. And they still have that nice liquidity with the investment in Nepi Rockcastle, which is, of course, the largest REIT on the market, but it's actually an offshore entrant into East Europe. So yes, that's an interesting one for me as well. So Fortress, the share price has improved a bit. There is still over a sort of around 5% yield. It's a bit, it's sort of a bit more of an investment that suits an equity portfolio in my view than Growthpoint would be. Growthpoint really purely, the yield play, and it's so large, well managed, nothing wrong with it. But yeah, I don't think you're going to shoot the lights out or get any sort of positive growth surprises there, because they're pretty well versed when coming to market. You always know what you're going to expect from them. Well managed, you're not going to lose money most probably, but you're probably just going to be earning a yield if that's your thing.
Yeah, I take your point. They're so big they can't surprise us. I mean, they're there and they're just so massively diverse. We'll leave it there. Mirkle from Kruger International, always appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter is around the local REITs. Mir saying she likes Fortress and Growthpoint. What's your take? What are your preferred in the space? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Leon Kutsia, Jubilee Metals CEO. Leon, appreciate the time today. I want to talk around your PGMs and your chrome, but let's start with copper. Let's start with Zambia. I mean, you wish in Jubilee Metals' life, about 5 years that you initially moved into copper. You've just had a recent announcement in terms of some updates there, but your short-term target, looking at around 3,250, 4,000 tons. Long-term, 25,000 tons. This is potentially going to be a giant operation.
Thank you for the opportunity. Yes, no, very much. I mean, we entered Zambia back in 2019 in November, had some hard lessons to learn. We were quite clear on what we were trying to achieve, but we had to first, you know, get our feet under the table, understand Zambia, understand the environment, understand the infrastructure challenges. But certainly where we are now, we can see the very clear path towards this actually medium-term, not even long-term goal of hitting our 25,000 tons of copper. And as you said, yes, for this financial period ending in June, looking at between 3,500 to 4,000 tons and then doubling that comfortably in the next period.
You mentioned challenges in Zambia. I mean, mining in of itself is difficult, often in hospitable places. You've obviously got to get the commodity out the ground. You've got to get the commodity out of the rock at sometimes sort of 3%, 4%, 5% grades. What were some of the, perhaps the unique challenges in Zambia?
Well, I suppose to put in perspective is, you know, if you look at the Jubilee model, which we're pioneering in the industry, and we focus on what many people regard as possibly too complex, low grade, or even waste. And from that, we apply our processing abilities and techniques and extract value as our chrome business has grown to a very large entity. And that's the approach we took to Zambia. That naturally takes you into areas that might be a bit more remote, but underserviced in infrastructure.
Yeah.
And therefore, the infrastructure support becomes a vital component to the successful implementation of your project. And we had to come up with solutions where our projects don't become hamstrung or being dictated to by the rollout of an infrastructure plan in Zambia, but instead that our projects could operate independent of those challenges. And those were the lessons in engineering, in design, in where we locate our facilities that we had to learn, which probably was the most significant component of adjusting to those challenges.
And then how do you get the copper out of Zambia? I mean, it's a landlocked country. You could bring it down south to South Africa. That's not going to be easy. And of course, we have got challenges. I mean, are you taking it out through, I mean, is it Mozambique, Tanzania?
Yeah, very much. I mean, logistics and mining is nowadays so integrated. You know, your product is one thing to get it out, and you are right, we take it up north. And we use South Africa as both exits out of Zambia, being landlocked. But equally, your challenge of getting your equipment into a landlocked country is equally challenging. And that's something that, especially in the new modern world with various disruptions to supply chains, that you have to manage extremely carefully in a company. And with that, we've sort of adjusted to be a bit more locally manufactured and even adjust our designs to maximize locally sourced just to try and manage that supply chain challenge a bit better.
And I mean, copper itself, was this, I mean, I've had a couple of conversations around copper on the show, and I've heard, I mean, I've read reports around this as, you know, the commodity of the future. Certainly it is. As a green energy future, copper plays a huge part. As my science teacher said, you can't argue with the periodic table, and copper is, this is how we move electricity, transacted. Yes. Was this a strategic decision to say, hey, copper is the future and it's the space that you want to be in?
Yeah, very much so. It was driven by two factors. One was regional diversification. We were really focused and very heavily invested in South Africa and South Africa alone. We saw that we were reaching our goals in South Africa, so we had to, you know, look at other complementing minerals that sort of have a similar business opportunity and metallurgical extraction techniques required. Copper, as you accurately say, the fundamentals of copper is obvious. Mm. It's driven by its industrial use. It's also complemented by its challenges in supply. So we felt that it was the perfect mix of metals to get into, and then coupled to the fact that, you know, Zambia is a two-hour flight from South Africa. We're not trying to diversify immediately into a jurisdiction that are in a whole different time zone.
It used to be Jubilee Platinum. You changed it to Jubilee Metals. Makes sense because there's chrome as well, but now at copper as well. Would there, at some point, would you look for even perhaps another commodity to add into the mix?
Oh, absolutely. We definitely are reviewing that constantly to see which other commodity fundamentally has similar opportunities, especially in mining, where a commodity over the years, a certain process is technique or certain processing efficiency has become the norm and accepted by industry. That in itself opens up an opportunity to challenge those norms in that metal group. And a metal group, of course, has the right fundamental mix as chrome and as copper definitely has, no doubt.
Yeah, of course. I just suddenly remembered. I mean, you used to be at Anglo. You've been in mining forever in a day, much of your career. Let's come back to South Africa and touch on the chrome. And we're seeing a couple of the PGM miners look at the chrome space. You're doing what, maybe just shy of 1.5 million tons this year, targeting about 2 million. Chrome's another commodity that is seeing a structural shift and certainly pricing pressures, but demand coming through as well quite strongly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, chrome is one of those metals that we're absolutely investing heavily into. It's got a number of factors counting in its favor. And the chrome industry itself, you know, you can only have your shallow chrome once before you have to go deeper. That puts pressure on the cost structures. Equally, chrome is dominantly sourced out of South Africa. So it's a nice hedge to South Africa's own challenges. It's not as if you can go elsewhere and find chrome to fill the gap from South Africa. And as you correctly say, if you look at the stainless steel demand, it's so often poorly understood by industry with a metal like chrome, which is not traded on the LME.
Yeah.
It's physically traded, that the stainless steel growth over the past 3-5 years have been consistent and is consistently growing. And therefore, it drives a demand for more chrome and more chrome ore. And that, again, brings the opportunity where we focus, where of that 1.5 million tons you speak of, by far, the majority of that comes from reefs that the industry thought was too complex or too low grade.
You mentioned they're physically traded rather than sort of the LME. Is it contract-based then, or is it still a sort of floating price?
It's very much floating, but contract in the sense that as you become larger, as we've now reached the size we are, you have to start planning more on a contract-style basis because your logistical challenge to move that magnitude of material becomes something that you can't do short term. You do that long term, medium term planning for that structural and movement of that material out of South Africa. As your biggest demand by far, of course, is China.
Yeah, absolutely. PGMs, which is where Jubilee very much started, sort of doing a little over 40,000 ounces targeted this year. This is the mature part of the business. And my sense is probably production at capacity and maybe not an area you're massively focusing on compared to chrome and copper. Is that a fair shout?
It's fair in the sense that, of course, the PGMs is an outcome of our chrome business. It is mature. It's running very efficiently. It's also a nice product that comes as a byproduct out of our chrome business. And therefore, it's less fully exposed to the heavily cost pressures and the softer PGM price the market faces at the moment. You are right. It's not the fundamental focus of our business. It's a nice offset to our chrome business. And it's a nice hedge for when the PGM price recovers, which is fully expected by most of the PGM industry.
Fully expected by almost everyone. I mean, it was Neil Frontman who bravely, and back I think it was February, said the market has bottomed. The story for PGMs is still there. I know a lot of folks will say EVs, but ICE cars aren't going away. There's other uses for PGMs, but prices are just at this point kind of laughing at markets, and palladium and platinum stuck at around $1,000 an ounce.
Yeah, very much so. And I agree with Neil Finnerman's view is that if you look at the world, the demand and the supply, PGM prices are set to recover. And you are right. If you look towards the future, energy source, especially energy sources for motor vehicles, EV alone is unlikely to be the sole solution. Mm-hmm. It has to be complemented by other sources because we simply don't have enough copper in the world to feed that kind of EV demand in the world in any event. And if you look at the uptake of hybrid vehicles becoming far more popular, it is driving the need for PGMs again. So no doubt, I think we all are expecting that recovery to come in the near future.
Yeah, and I take your point. And certainly we've seen it. I think the early adopters all went pure EV, but I think a lot of folks, particularly around range anxiety, are looking at the hybrid. We'll leave it there. Leanne Coetzee, Jubilee Metals CEO, appreciate the time.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some thoughts. We all want more money. Of course, who doesn't? More is better when it comes to money. But is it money or is it you? So the TV show, How I Blew It, people who suddenly win a lotto and it all goes pear-shaped. But there's a bigger story here. Folks who are struggling and will get a chunky pay raise, a job promotion or something, and 6 months, a year later, they're still struggling. Make no mistake, in many cases, people just aren't earning enough. It's tough out there. But there are cases out there where it's more about your money management than actually how much money you really have. That's it for today. We were chatting with Gary Kutsia yesterday about confercations, basically adding a conference onto a holiday. Or I suppose it's the other way around, adding a holiday onto a conference. We asked if you'd done it. It was pretty much equally split between a third of you saying, nope, no conferences for you. A third saying, yep, and was great. And the rest saying, nope, you'll go to conferences, but it is just for work. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Norbochle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday, local small caps.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.